Ooh, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Floyd. AKA Flo. The hoe. Gotta get the hoe part in. Barbara's never gonna call me Floyd. Yeah. I'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah. I'm an alcoholic. I introduce myself that way to remind myself that I'm an alcoholic. I'm always gonna be an alcoholic. And the only way I can stay sober is one day at a time. Welcome anybody that's new. Welcome our visitor, Santa Cruz. Is that up by Capitola? Yeah. Beautiful place up there. My sobriety date is May 2nd, 2001. Not my idea. I'll get to that in a minute. Just turned 80 and 80 and change, so I need to have notes. I want to thank John for inviting me to speak again. I've waited 365 days. I love coming here on Memorial Day weekend. See, we got a whole desk full of little get your shit together cards from the judge. Yeah, I got here that way. Memorial Day weekend. As you can see, I served 3 tours of Vietnam. Any other veterans in the house? Yeah. Thank you for your service. People never ask why these men and women went and gave their lives. The answer's pretty simple. That you didn't have to. Less than 1% of the population goes and takes care of the rest of the 99% in this country. I'm not going to go statistics of World War I, II, Korea, or anything else because I only served in Vietnam. And these numbers I will never forget. Died in Vietnam. They're on the wall. 58,478 is the number I came up with. 33,103 were 22 years old or less. 8,283 were 19. 33,103 were only 18 years old. 12 of them were 17. That means you had to have permission from your parents to go over there and die. And we had 5 16-year-olds in Vietnam. We had 3 sets of fathers and sons that gave their lives. 997 of these men and women died on their first day. Their first day of the in country. And here's a number that kills me. 1,448 lost their lives on their last day in country. If that doesn't break your heart, I don't know what does. What, about 22,000 women served over in Vietnam. Eight women are on that wall, and they were all nurses. So, again, thank you for your service. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from alcoholism, and most of my story is more about the ism than the alcohol. I got to admit that I had a couple of adult beverages before I came here tonight. 2 Metamucils and an Ensure. So. And this is the first time that I have stood at this podium wearing an adult diaper. Yes, I'm wearing a pair of Depends. You know why they're called the Depends? Baby diapers are called Loves, Huggies, and Pampers. My diaper's called Depends. You know, because when babies shit their pants, we still love them, we still hug them, and we still pamper them. I guarantee if I shit my pants and I got to be changed, it's going to depend on who thinks they're in my will. Yeah. Yeah. And if I'm not your cup of tea, we have a coffee pot over there. I see that, I think this was Chris that did this. He left a whole thing of breath mints up here in case I start talking shit. And I always like to tell you that this disease is alive and well. My neighbor came over the other night, just buck naked, wearing nothing but a see-through little, what do you call him, Victoria's Got a Secret thingy. Yeah, want to have a cup of coffee and talk about politics and shit. And I said, for Christ's sakes, go home, George. I use a lot of humor because my story is pretty dark, pretty painful. I like to break the ice. Got a whole table full of new Floydlings, pretty much, old Floydlings. Greg was my firstborn. Raise your hand, Greg. 20 years ago, Greg asked me to take him through the steps. Now I haven't stopped taking men through the steps since. So. And I picked up Kenny last Saturday, this new guy. What we do. I had no purpose in life when I was out there drinking. Today I have a purpose. Stay sober, help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. So, good stories start with the beginning. Great stories start with once upon a time. So, let's get to it. Y'all ready to have some fun? Yeah. All right. 9 months prior to September 16th, 1945, my daddy didn't pull out soon enough, and here I am. I was born in a town called Rutland, Vermont. I had a couple of wonderful parents. My dad worked 40 miles away. He rode a Indian motorcycle, rain, snow, sleet, or hail. He was my hero. And my dad was John Wayne and Superman and Batman. And here I come to save the day, Mouse. He was all superhero to me. My dad was 16 years old, was walking out of a movie theater in Rutland. Somebody pushed him from behind, and he happened to knock down this old lady in front of him. And my dad got up and turned around and knocked the guy out with one punch that pushed him. Problem was, the guy that he knocked out was kind of mafia connected, had a big ego and a lot of pride, and he would just put the shame in front of all of his friends. So 2 weeks later, my dad was shot with a double barrel shotgun, point blank in the gut. Not too many people survived being gut shot. He was in the hospital 32 weeks because they had to cut him open and take the pellets out and stitch him back up. Take x-rays, cut the pellets out and stitch him back up. 32 weeks he had to. Given the last rites 3 times. had a seventh grade education, became a master machinist. My daddy died at the age of 83. I went to Catholic school. I was forced to go to Catholic school by my mom. My dad did not go to church, but he made sure that I had to go to church. And our church was right across from my school. And at the age of 7, I'm walking to school, and one of the deacons of our church approached me. And I was raised to respect my elders and not question them. And that deacon took me up into the choir loft of that church, and I was sexually abused for the first time. Sexually abused is a nice word, more like raped and sodomized. First time. Didn't stop, did not end, because I was afraid to tell. I believed what he told me was God's will, and that if I told, I was going to go to hell. And that seven-year-old, when you're 7 years old, you believe that shit. Thank God a couple of years later, we moved out of that town, 40 miles away where my dad worked. But the perverts in this world, they know all the other perverts, and they let the other perverts know that Floyd don't tell. So you become the victim of the next sickly. Sick. Just like us. We're sick. We're not bad. I had to realize when I got sober that he was sick, and I had to find a way to forgive that guy and them guys. But it's part of the ism. You know, my dad taught me what he called mastery of life was to take life, whatever it throws at you, and you just stuff it down as far as you can stuff it, and you don't let it come back up. Never show fear. Learn how to defend yourself. You be the guy that goes and knocks out the bully. And you protect your brother and your sister. Moving forward. I was a good student. My mom was she was like everybody's mom. She worked at the town diner and everybody knew her. And she was just everybody's mom. Good woman. Had a baby brother and a baby sister, all 2 years apart. And my dad being a lesson, he liked to teach us lessons. Senior prom comes along. I have never had a drink. My dad smoked. I wanted to sneak cigarettes, but I knew he'd break my arm. So senior prom night, he gave me a whole bottle of Southern Comfort. My first drink. A whole bottle of Southern Comfort. And he said, oh, hell, it's like Kool-Aid, man, it ain't gonna hurt you. Shit, it hurt me for about 6 days. And I said, never again. Never again. 18, age of 18. Now, I want you to remember what happened to me when I was 7, because it's an intricate part of the story. So, about 3 weeks after my senior prom, I moved out here to California from Vermont, and I was going to live with my aunt and uncle, because if you became a resident out here, you could go to school tuition free and just have to pay for books. That was the plan. and one of my best friends from high school decided to come out, just to come out and see me. Him and I are still best friends today, by the way. Still best friends today. And he said, "Hey, I'm thinking about going in the Air Force. I don't want to get drafted." This was 1963. He said, "I'm going to go down and see the Air Force recruiter tomorrow." And I said, "Hell, I'll go with you." Well, the Air Force recruiter was out to lunch. Navy recruiter wasn't. And shit, the rest is history. Yep. We both joined the Navy that day. And I thought I was going to get sent down here to beautiful San Diego and T.C., because this was October. Hell no. They had a thing called the rabbit rule. Anybody know that rule? If you join on the East Coast, you get sent to the West Coast, and vice versa, in case you miss your mama. You got a long way to go home. So they sent me to Great Lakes, and Great Lakes in October, November, December are just freezing. And I remember I was out there about 4:30 in the morning, and I'm guarding this dumpster with a gun with no bullets in it. And I'm going, "Jesus, what have I done?" I played in a marching band in school, and so I knew how to march, and they made me a platoon leader. And they also made me the color guard, honor guard. And every morning I would go out and put the flag up, and I would take it down. One day I get a phone call, said, "You need to go put the flag at half mast." And that's the day Kennedy got assassinated. My favorite president. Ism, that's part of my ism. Graduated from Great Lakes, and guess where they sent me? Sunny San Diego. Prayers were answered. Put me on an amphibious ship. Anybody know what an amphibious ship is? That's right. We land Marines on the beaches. Pick them up and drop them off. Hopefully bring them back. The scene in Saving Private Ryan when they hit Normandy. That's a heartbreaking scene. Part of my ism. I landed many Marines on that silver strand over there at Coronado. And I'll be damned if they didn't say, "Well, son, now we're going to send you to a little shithole called Vietnam." Never heard of Vietnam? But I went. 1965, 20 years old. 20 years old. And I can tell you, that was just my first tour. I came back, they taught me how to run river patrol boats. If you ever watched the movie Apocalypse Now, that was my boat. 2 years on that little bastard. Four-man crew. In the three tours of Vietnam, I never lost one of my crewmen. Because I didn't drink, and I didn't do dope. And everybody that was dying around me, because we had a 73% casualty rate for our job. If they came back to that boat drunk or high, I was going to shoot him my damn self. Because they were not going to get me killed. When you go to war, you do things and see things that nobody should ever have to do or see. If you've never killed somebody up close, from a distance, especially up close, face to face, hand to hand, that never goes away. Never goes away. We didn't have PTSD when we came back from Vietnam. They still called it shell shock. I had PTSD. But that mastery that my dad taught me got me through that. I came back from my final tour of Vietnam in late 1970, and this young gal from Modesto, California, she was like a pen pal. You ever get pen pal letters? Any of you vets? Yeah. Well, she wrote me a letter every single day that I was gone to Vietnam. Anybody read romance novels back in the day? Come on, it's an honest program. Yeah. Yeah. Those books are pretty steamy. Yeah. Yeah. And she wrote some good letters, man. And I just thought to myself, shit, if I make it out of this shit and get back there, I gotta meet her. And I did. And I said, hey, how'd you like to marry my ass? I think that's how I proposed to. And she said yes. We got a nice little place over there in Coronado, and I have some friends from Coronado that it's the first time they've had a chance to come hear me speak. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. So I had a nice little place over in Coronado, and I like to play pool, and I like to actually hustle pool, and I like to jukebox, and I like to sing. Now, what's the name of that bar across from Bonds, or across from Starbucks over there? What's the name of that one? No, that came later. Anyway, I'm in that bar and I'm playing pool and I'm singing. I think I was singing one of them country brothers. Bellamy Brothers. I was singing the Bellamy Brothers tune, and this couple walked in, and they said, shit, man, you got a good voice. KSON Radio is having a big talent contest. You should go enter it. And I'm thinking, hell no. They said, look, here's our card. If you change your mind, give us a call. We'll come get you. And I went home and asked the wife what she thought, and she goes, well, shit, you just sit around here moping all the time because you ain't got nothing to do. Hell, go do it. So I went and entered this talent contest, and when the DJ asked me my name, I said, my name's Eddie Funguzzi. Yeah, it's kind of Italian and Chinese. Yeah. I just made it up off the top of my head. He said, I'll screw that up real good. How about if I just call you Eddie Spaghetti? Yeah. Eddie Spaghetti was kind of born that day. Ended up winning all the whole nine yards. I won it all. And wasn't even singing country music. I was singing 50s rock and roll, because that's what I love. You know, the Buddy Holly and the Chuck Berry and the Elvis. And, yeah, that good stuff. Bebop, doo-wop, no hip-hop. So everybody says, why don't you put a band together? And I said, well, you know, I'm in the Navy. Shit, I'm here today and gone tomorrow. Admiral King... I forgot that Admiral King had come down and asked me to stay for another year in Vietnam, personally. And I said, well, if you put a letter in my record, send one to my parents and my parents' attorney, that as long as I stay in this man's Navy, I stay based in San Diego. Problem solved. Went out and started auditioning some musicians. that could not only play 50s rock and roll, but sing the harmonies and all the other stuff. So now you've got to have a place to play, or you don't have a band. So a friend of mine, a pilot from Vietnam, named John Gents, had bought this little place down in Imperial Beach called the Country Bumpkin. There you go. Yeah. And I went down and talked to John. I said, hey, I got this 50s rock and roll band. I know you play country music 7 nights a week, but, you know, if you go to a disco place on Wednesday night, they play nothing but oldies, and the place is packed, and people are spending money. They ain't nursing, what do you call them, mimosa all night long? Any mimosa drinkers in here? Yeah, we used to ask that question at our men's meeting out in La Mesa. They said yes, we would give them directions to a woman's meeting. Yeah. I often ask myself, is it what you drink that makes you an alcoholic? Because I ain't never met nobody that couldn't handle Jello shots. Or slippery nipples. Yeah. What was that, Sex on the Beach drink? Shit, I couldn't handle more than two of them myself. I like whiskey, man. That's my drink. My favorite drink was, of course, the next one. Probably yours, too. So there we are. He gave me 2 nights a week, Sunday and Monday nights. Probably the two worst nights in the entertainment business. Everybody got to get up and go to work Monday. They're still hungover Monday night. 7 years we played there, standing room only. Now we needed to get a manager so we could go out and make some real money. John was a cheap bastard. Now I went out and talked to this fella down in Mission Valley. His name name was Stan Jacobs. Anybody know that name? Well, Stan just happened to be the manager for a little group called the Beatles. And he took us on. And yeah, if you grow up listening to 50s rock and roll, you know, there's a whole bunch of bands, artists that you're just your heroes, you know. And our band got to open for the Diamonds, the Platters, Coasters, Little Anthony and the Imperials, the Shirelles, Little Eva, Ricky Nelson when he was still alive, Roy Orbison, Frankie Avalon, who's my number one guy. And we got to open for the Beach Boys twice. Floyd has still not had that next drink. That was 1979. Following year, 1980, we're down there and we're up on stage and the waitress brings a little tray of drinks up that somebody bought the band a round of drinks. Now, people have bought the band a round of drinks many, many times, but I always gave it to somebody else. And that night, 1980, I picked up that drink. Didn't even know what the hell it was. Turned out to be a little thing called Grand Marnier. No. And the effect of that drink was totally different than that damn bottle of Southern Comfort. I liked it a lot. And it set off the phenomenon of craving. I couldn't stop. 1980. By 1990, Willie knew me back in 89 and 90. Right, Willie? Willie and I used to drink at Stoney's down there in Nashville City. Anybody remember the mile of bars before it was the mile of cars? Yeah, Eddie, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I knew all them bars because I was military police, and I have to go in them bars and drag all you drunken sailors out, and a few Marines. And I never wanted to be like them drunks I was dragging out of those bars. And that's what I became. 1990, so that's 10 years of drinking. 10 years. 1990, I had this beautiful house that I worked 3 jobs to buy. Then I went and bought another house down on 2nd and K Street. That little adobe one, if you ever down that way, you know it. Beautiful house. Beautiful wife. Same wife. Couple of great kids. One of the best bands in San Diego. And one day, they just did not matter anymore. And I walked out the door in 1990, and I didn't know where the hell I was going or what I was going to do. But I found this shopping cart, and I liked that shopping cart. And old Floyd decided to live out of that damn thing the next 11 years of his life. Like all them other poor souls you see out there. I had drank myself insane. And I didn't think there was any way out. Got in a little trouble with the local police because, you know, I smelled bad, I looked bad, but, you know, I had a little money in my pocket, especially the first of each month. I was getting half a pension. The ex was still getting the other half. She was going to get that till she remarried or died, and she wouldn't do either one of them, so. So I'd go in them bars, and I would just, people would be disgusted that I was even in the same room with them. And I would become an angry drunk, and I would become confrontational. Mean. What happens when you do that in a bar of the 86, you right? Right? Yeah. Well, yeah, shit, Floyd ain't gonna stay 86. So I'd go back and cause some more hate and discontent. And I'll be a son of a bitch. The one got restraining order. Not one bar. 5 of them. And I'm violating restraining orders now. That's a felony. And apparently I'm calling people up, telling them I'm going to... We called it, I didn't threaten to kill anybody, but we called it in Vietnam foobard. It kind of like fire trucked up beyond all recognition. So yeah, I went to the Manhattan bar May 2nd, 2001. 10 a.m., because that's when they open. And shit, before she could get that drink on the bar, there was an undercover cop in there dressed like a biker. And another one come through the back door with a dog. And I wanted to run, but shit, ain't going anywhere. So here I go. I go off to jail. I'm right down there in 3rd Avenue and 8th Street. And I'm old guy, so they call me OG. I thought OG was old guy. It's original gangster, so I didn't know that shit. And yeah. And I was a wood, you know. You go to jail, you become a wood. If you're a white guy anyway. You ain't allowed to talk to the other guys. Can't talk to my brother here. Can't talk to any of the Hispanic guys. Southsiders or Pisces. Can't talk to any Oriental guys because they make them hang out with you guys, right? So, just a racist-ass system they got down there, I'll tell you that. Yeah. So the guard comes up to me and said, hey, Floyd, you have a visitor. Shit, who the hell knows I'm here? So the people that put me here. And I know they ain't going to come visit my ass. And I went down to the visitor's room, and it was my daughter. Daughter that ain't got a card or a letter or phone call from me for 11 years. And I said, hell, how did you even know I was here? Remember, I gave up on God in second grade, folks. And she said that the detective that booked you, I'm his babysitter. And he thought I had a right to know where you were. Because, Daddy, I've been looking for you the whole time. Her and my son had gone to almost every homeless camp in San Diego. I was up in North County most of the time. She said, Daddy, we've already forgiven you. You gotta find a way to forgive yourself. And the reason they forgave me, not only her, but my son and my former wife, is because somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous took the time to sit down with my family and explain this damn disease. So, she said, you've got two grandkids that you've never met, and when you get out of jail, I want you to come be part of their lives. You can't do that if you're drunk. So, midnight, Christmas, 1 minute after midnight would be Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Christmas Day, they let me out of a little place, that little place down there, it's called it's a recovery place, isn't it? No, that little detox down there called George Bailey. Yeah. So my son is there to pick me up. Son hadn't got a card, letter, or phone call for 11 years. Grown man now. And he took me to my former wife's house. And I got to meet my grandbabies. Now I thought she had forgiven me, but she had a new boyfriend. And about midnight, about 1 o'clock in the morning, they put me in the guest bedroom, which is right next to the master bedroom. And her and him are doing the oohing and ahhing and ohing and hoo-yah and, shit, about one more who's your daddy, and I'm cracking the cap on a bottle of Jack, I'll tell you that. And my daughter could see that I was upset and I was panicked. And I was scared. And she said, let's go home. Let's go to my house. You can sleep on the couch and get to know these kids. I'll help you get into a program. But you got to go to AA, Dad. Not the judge. My daughter sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting was that little... little group called Bayview Hospital, Top of the Hill Group. Any Top of the Hillers in here tonight? Woohoo! Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be damned. I heard what I needed to hear at my first meeting. Whew. Message of hope. Helping other people escape, H-O-P-E. by hearing other people's experiences, like you are right now, hearing mine. My favorite hope was having our problems erased. Because when I got here, if all I had to do was stop drinking, shit, this would have been a walk in the park. I had all kinds of legal stuff. You new guys, if you're facing that kind of stuff out there, pay attention. I had 5 years of formal probation. I had to go to anger management. Pay for it. Had to go to therapy once a week for a year. Pay for it. Owed the IRS $80,000. Owed the state of California $33,000. I owed the victims of my crime, whatever the hell they were, $11,000. And I make $750 a month. And I got to pay rent here at South Bay Pioneers, right? And I'm telling myself, can't be done. Might as well go out and live in the bush again. Anybody know Caroline Woolway? Yeah, Caroline came up to me with her husband, Jim, at the end of that first meeting and said, you know, Floyd, you don't have to drink ever again. One day at a time, even if you want to. That's a pretty bold statement. But she didn't lie to me. Anybody know Scott Smith? Scott had lived in the bush just like me for 13 years, long time, and found a way to stay sober for 3 years, one day at a time. And when I heard him share that experience, if it can work for him, it might work for me. Scott also told me that night about a place called South Bay Pioneers. And I called the next day, and Jim Bagwell. Jim, you here? Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy was managing this place back then, and he said, sorry, the place is, we got a full house. I accepted that, but my daughter didn't. And she called here the next morning, going to give him the hell, what, the why and what for and all that stuff. And Frank Brown answered the phone, I believe, and Frank said, you know what? Somebody that didn't want this gift went out and got drunk last night. Send your daddy down to see me. And I became a resident just like you guys that are new in the house. Day one, just like you. You know. They have a set of rules that they make us read, and if you can't follow them rules, don't sign the damn paper. But at the bottom of them rules, it has one little statement. Basically, it's telling you, if you follow these rules, if you're willing to do what's written on this paper right here, just one day at a time, you can become an adult man of character. And I never thought I could be that. Didn't have a job when I got here. Like I said, I had a whole lot of money to pay out. And couldn't afford to do that. My daughter called me up and said, they have an outpatient program at 32nd Street. And South Bay Pioneers said, you can go to that every day, no problem. Just be back here for dinner and chores, just like we tell you guys. I did a 30-day outpatient program at SARD. Still needed a job because my sponsor wanted me to have a job. So he would tell me, right next door is a senior complex. And I want you to go down to that office every single day and say, do you have any job openings? And every day I went down there and said, do you have any job openings? And I'll be damned. 8 months later, they said, you know what? We do. Head of maintenance. Head of maintenance. Another God shot there, I'll tell you that. I had the keys to 207 people's apartments next door, and them sons of bitches used to kick me out of that dumpster. Well, talk about change, right? Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like these adult diapers, you know. If I'd have known they were this damn comfortable, I'd have bought these sons of bitches years ago. Yeah. I could stand right here and pee right now, and you ain't gonna know shit. Yeah. Now, I know some of you came just to hear my my story about my naughty grandpa. You know the movie Bad Grandpa with Robert De Niro? Anybody see that? Yeah, well, probably based that movie on my grandpa. My grandpa told me a whole bunch of stuff. Is Marie here tonight from Coronado? This is her favorite. Never hold in your fart. You know what happens when you do that? It kind of just traveled all the way up your spine, right into your brain. And that's where that stinking thinking comes from. Yeah. Yeah. My grandpa was pretty old, so he dated like nothing but old broads, you know what I mean? And he told me that there's only one thing with balls that old women like. Bingo. Yeah. And he said, by all means, stay away from any woman that can correctly spell gonorrhea or syphilis or know what a glory hole is. Should I have warned him at the beginning, Chris? And life is all about one thing. Ass. You're either trying to cover your ass, kick your ass, work your ass off, bite it, smell it, or get a piece of it. Yeah. Now you wish you didn't tell me about the grandpa's yet. Okay, so I got time to tell you a couple of stories. I think I have the greatest sponsor in the world. I sponsor a lot of guys. I don't know what the hell they think of me, but you know, you guys saved my life. I don't know if I'm saving yours, but I can't stay sober unless I'm helping another drunk do that. So my sponsor was Wayne Hastings. He was like a top sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. He was a mean son of a bitch, and he didn't cut me no slack, and that's the kind of sponsor I needed. And I remember I'd been in the house, I don't know, maybe a year. They had a Halloween party. And I came as Rod Stewart the first Halloween party. And then the second Halloween party, my sponsor was talking to me back there in the kitchen, and a couple of gals on the auxiliary heard him tell me that I was too goddamn macho and I needed to find a way to get in touch with my feminine side. So that Halloween, two of the gals on the auxiliary decided that we're going to dress you up this year, Floyd. And they dressed me up as a hooker. They had a blonde wig and had water balloons in my titties just shaking the shit out of them. Had a mini skirt, it wasn't even a mini skirt, it was a leather duck skirt. You know what a duck skirt is? So short you could see my quack. No, I'm not drunk. I do this shit sober all the time. So, anyway, it was so much fun that I did it for the next 6 years. And Barbara, yeah, I was called Flo the Ho, and I had this little thing on my dress top, but not even a dress. It was just a red thing with a boa. Remember, I had the boa, and that little thing said Flo the Ho. It was like a badge to protect and serve. Mostly serve. So, one of the fun things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the book insists that we enjoy life. You enjoying life tonight? I hope so. I hope I made you think about something. Hope I made you feel something. I hope you got a few laughs, because laughter is the best medicine. Oh. People ask me what Alcoholics Anonymous is. A couple of things. When Colonel Hal Moore took 200 men into the Valley of Death to face 2,000 North Vietnamese regulars that had wiped out the French for 30 years, he told them, "We're about to face an enemy that don't give a shit what skin color is. Doesn't care what language you speak. Don't give a shit what name you call your God. It's got one purpose and one purpose only: to kill you." Kind of like this disease. Doesn't care what color we are, or status in life, what language we speak, or who we call our God. And he told them, "But we don't fight together, we will certainly die." Same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I gave up on God in second grade. God got me through all that childhood trauma. God got me through 21 campaigns in Vietnam. God got me through 11 years out there on that street. God brought me here to this house, this sacred house, this house of drunks, because of what happened in his house when I was 7 years old. There's this dad, he's down in his workshop working on this project. And his son comes downstairs and says, "Daddy, let's go play catch." And dad wants to finish his project. So he hands a little boy a puzzle and he said, "Hey, you go put this puzzle together and then we'll play catch." And the dad's thinking is, that's a puzzle of the world. And the little boy has no idea what the world looks like. And I can finish my project. And a little while later, the little boy comes back, and he's got the puzzle put together. And the dad says, "Oh my God, how did you do that? That's a puzzle of the world. You have no idea what the world looks like." And the little boy said, "The other side of the puzzle, Daddy, was a picture of a man. And I know what a man looks like. And when I put the man back together, the whole world fell into place." Thanks for having me.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Woo. Floyd, thank you for coming up here and doing this again like we do every year. You know, Floyd told you he was a resident here at this house. But not only are you a resident, but you're such a big part of the landscape that happens and all the good things that happen and all the sponsees you have. He also worked at this house. He was also the manager of this house. He also served a couple tours of duty here as an employee and has served on the board of directors here. So, Floyd, thank you so much for not only your service to our country, but to this place. And it is what it is because of you and men like you. So thank you so much. One more time for my friend Floyd. Thank you to the women of the Ladies Auxiliary and the men of the house for a great dinner tonight. Thank you all for coming, and let's end in the usual manner. Let's circle up. Purple shoe doesn't go with the shoes, bro.